Welcome to the FT Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 31st of January. And I'm recording at 10:20 p.m., and that's Greenwich Mean Time. Now, this being Friday, this is the big long-term outlook for the various asset classes. But first, let's just have a quick review here of what's happened this week. Well, in terms of stock markets, it's been a difficult week with downward pressure, as we have seen earlier in January as well, as you'll be aware. And so almost all stock markets are down during the month of January. Now, that brings up the issue of the January effect, which I've talked about previously and including in last night's audio, the January effect. And I'll just mention it again, in that I've never been that big a follower of it, but more often than not, if you look at the historic data, more often than not, that as January goes, so goes the rest of the year. But I think it's a marginal difference. And if you look at what happened over the last few years, over the previous 4 years, in other words, 2010 through 2013, we had gains in January, and we had good gains during the year, but 2013's gains were so strong that my feeling, as you probably recall, and a good many of you will have shared this view, was that it would be naive to expect that markets are going to go roaring up this January against the background of the quantitative easing that we knew back in December was occurring, and the rate that the in terms of the Fed's buying has been cut now in two 10 billion cuts clips. It's gone from 85 billion down to 65 billion, and more tapering, obviously planned. Now, the last time we had a down month in January was in 2009. And of course, 2009 was a good year in the stock market, but stock markets were recovering from a very severe bear market. So again, that's not surprising. So again, I don't want to overemphasize the January effect, but my overall view, given the gains that we had seen last year in leading stock markets, that this year was certainly going to be very choppy. And also, we know that the emerging market problems that we've been hearing a great deal about quite recently, but those had actually started last May. And so that was something that we could see on the charts and also be aware of. And my feeling is that we're not through with this corrective phase that we've actually seen. Valuations have improved most in that emerging market area, but they can be highly volatile. And you know what happened there with those markets, that they bottomed out in the fourth quarter of 2008. They were leading the way up, and so on relative performance, that attracted a lot of support, and investors from all over the world had opened more positions in a number of those emerging markets, and not least the ASEAN sector in Asia that has so often done so well over the years, and then given up a great deal during subsequent bearish phases. But then with the US bond yields and Western bond yields also low, that a number of Western investors had put money into emerging market bonds, and this had all helped to drive their currencies higher. And when they started to get nervous, and it was starting last year, from that May period onwards, then people began to pull money out. So it just threw everything into reverse, and the stock markets went from those May highs, from outperformance to underperformance, and the currencies did the same thing. And we then had money coming out of the bond markets as well. The way the story will end out, I think we'll get a bigger shakeout in those emerging markets, and then that will create the next really good buying opportunity. And they're quite volatile. So in terms of statistics, we're already seeing some modest bear markets, and I think that they'll get a little bit bigger overall. In terms of the Western markets, and take Wall Street in particular, given the huge influence that Wall Street has on other markets, you know, it's over 600 days since we saw that last 10% correction. So I would feel that we will see in this move that's currently underway, that started this month, and that we'll see at least a 10% correction for those U.S. indices. And I think that it's not by any means impossible that we will see some reactions on Wall Street this year that could be in the 10 to possibly even 20% range. I don't regard 20% as a bear market move myself, although I know that some people do statistically. But I think we'll see that kind of volatility, because first we have the tapering. We also have the overvalued leaders to those big stock market bull runs that we saw. So high valuations. We have relatively slow, given the soft economy, soft global economy, we have relatively slow revenue growth for the individual companies, which have been flattering their earnings by share buybacks at a time when money was extremely cheap. Well, it's still extremely cheap, and so that they can go on doing that, and no doubt those that have positive revenue streams will be doing just that. But the message, certainly the short-term message and the medium-term message for this year, is expect plenty of choppy activity. It won't come as a surprise, I'm sure, to you to hear me say that, and experienced investors will have no trouble understanding the reasons behind that view overall. I think of it in some respects as a very lengthy consolidation process, which will gradually bring down the valuations overall. And while nobody, obviously nobody knows for sure how markets are going to play out, particularly against this background of the unwind of the quantitative easing here overall, I do feel if there's a parallel with the last long valuation contraction cycle, and then towards the end of that, valuation shot up. And I'm thinking back that period from really 1963 through 1982, but about 1979 or so, we saw the stock markets range somewhat lower in a choppy fashion, and that led to valuations becoming quite attractive once again before moving on into the secular bull market. So that's just a possible template, but I think it's not an unrealistic one, and it's the one that I carry in mind and repeat to you here is the most likely possibility. But if we see something else that changes that, either for the better or the worse, then we will be aware of it, and discuss whatever it is that's taking place. But overall, again, against this background of choppy market activity, I don't think that's a terrifying environment by any means. But it will be more volatile than we're used to, at least in the developed markets, for a while. My hunch is that global GDP growth will continue to gradually improve overall, and as in an erratic fashion, but as it does, at least on an annual basis, continue to improve overall, that will provide the earnings to help lower valuations, just while stock markets stay in overall ranges or move somewhat lower over the next few months. Now, looking beyond that, I remain a big long-term bull. I noticed that a lot of people now are talking about the rapid technological improvements. It's something that FT Money has been discussing certainly for well over a year. If I take that the whole history, and I'm obviously not going to review it all of technological innovation, it's been occurring throughout the entire human history, going right back to cavemen. But the trouble is that it was so slow, technological innovation, that it could take centuries before major breakthroughs occurred. Well, fast forward here to today, and we live in an environment where if you look back 10 years, you can see all sorts of astonishing technological achievements in all sorts of different fields. And I'm not just talking about consumer goods such as telephones and the keypads and the computers, because we're very aware of those, but all of the miniaturization, which is helping industry so much, all the smart sensors that are actually taking place, the graphene, you could go on and on and on. And list these developments, it's a very exciting time, and it's a very particularly attractive time for the corporate world overall, as I've mentioned on pretty well every one of these audios overall. And I see no reason why we shouldn't go on seeing an accelerating rate of technological innovation for the long-term future. And I feel that will be one of the two key factors that lead to the next secular bull market. And I've mentioned for it must be over a year now that I thought that before the end of this decade that we would see evidence that we were beginning what in all likelihood would be another secular bull market. The technological innovation will be a hugely important factor in earnings for the more successful autonomies that FT Money likes so much and has liked so much over the last few years. Right now, too many of those shares are overbought and coming back and going to get lengthy medium-term corrective phases, but that's good. That helps to create the next buying opportunity in those shares. And then the other factor that I've often mentioned, which was crucial, but I thought that we would see that would be a contributor to the next secular bull market, would be lower energy costs in real terms, in other words, inflation-adjusted terms. And I think we see factors in place that can certainly contribute to that. The two main ones, and there are many different sources of energy that we're seeing. But the two that are most important are the fracking that's taking place, particularly for natural gas. It's not spreading around the globe as fast as I had hoped, and we've certainly seen delays in the UK, and the situation in Europe is even worse, with governments being quite hostile in most instances to the fracking. But I think that competitive realities will quite possibly change that thinking, or at least I hope that's the case overall, because I think that this is a terrific source of energy that is not all that expensive, that lowers costs for consumers and lowers costs for businesses, and it actually lowers the atmospheric pollution that we're actually seeing if most of that energy is coming from natural gas, and there's certainly enough natural gas to last countries, well, there's a good many decades of supply of natural gas available to be tapped. Then the other sort of big factor that can lower those energy costs, that's going to be it's developing and contributing much more slowly, but it will become more important over time, and that will be the solar energy, which is by far the most attractive of the various known alternative energy sources here so far. And I feel that by the end of this decade, the combination of fracking and much, much higher yielding solar energy will have ensured that we have this lower energy cost worldwide. That will be another big factor behind increasing global GDP growth and a big contributor to that secular bull market that I'm anticipating. Okay, well, enough of all that, but it's a very, very exciting background. What else to talk about in terms of long-term government bonds? The yields are not moving up here in the short term, and that's good news. I think the where are we about US? I think we're about 2.74 on the USGG10. I'll just check that. Forgive me for this pause while I bring this up. But I wanted to. I was way too high. 2.64, 2.644. So we've come down from that just over 3% level that we last saw at the beginning of January. And Owen and I feel that this pattern that we've been in here, this ranging pattern, which really goes back to about the middle of last year, is the first step above the base. Any of you who've attended the chart seminar will know that pattern, and you get these ranging bases, and then finally an upside breakout. And very often, after those, particularly after those type 3 bases, the type large ranging time and size bases, you usually get a first step above the base, which can be anything from a few weeks to a year or more in the extreme, and we are still in this first step above the base pattern overall. I don't think yields will go much below 2.5 on that US 10-year if we see that at all, because I think growth will be strong enough to keep it above that level. My feeling remains that as the US economy gradually and erratically improves, that we will see those yields push back up to that 3% level, and the next time they push back up to 3%, I think they'll hold it and then break upwards, because we are in the beginning of a bear market for long-term government bond yields, meaning that yields will be rising, and that's not a difficult forecast, in my opinion, because we have seen the end of that 31-year bull market in terms of falling long-dated government bond yields. In terms of the bear phase that we're in right now, I think it will develop slowly because global GDP growth is picking up slowly, which is consistent with what we see after severe credit crisis recessions. So I think we'll have a few more years of slow GDP growth, but that people will become a little bit less concerned about recession and deflation over those next few years, and we will therefore see their long-dated government bonds, and I'm talking about now other countries as well, gradually ranging sideways to higher. I don't think we'll see a whole lot of that this year, but over, I'm talking about the next few years, they will, those yields will gradually be pushing up. If it happens faster and they move up too quickly, that would become a problem. But I see no sign of that here at this time. So that's a distant medium term prospect, I would say, at best. But you compare the bonds with the stock market, and despite the volatility, the extra volatility that you have in the stock market, I think it's a much more attractive play for investors, both on a short-term basis and on a very long-term basis. And as these stock markets come down during this corrective phase, that will create more opportunities to buy. And if you own long-dated government bonds, I think that this current move towards lower yields is a good time to be considering taking profits in these instruments. So I'm a long-term bear on the long-dated government bond yields, expecting them to move higher, but I don't expect them to move anywhere near as high as we saw in that last bear market cycle. In other words, I don't expect U.S. 10-year bonds to be getting back up to 12-15% as we saw in the Paul Volcker days. The background fundamentals are very different this time around. And what else to mention in terms of currencies? I think one of the big changes is that the U.S. dollar, which has been a serially weak currency for much of my career, I feel that we are in overall base formation development, and that the dollar will be one of the stronger currencies over the medium to longer term. I don't expect any kind of quick move up because growth is still quite slow. The Fed would try to prevent that. I've said on many occasions that we live in an environment where no country wants a strong currency, but some countries can handle a strong currency a little bit better than others. But the U.S. will be more concerned about its overall economic recovery, and therefore the Fed will be wanting to keep the bond yields down for as long as it can, and it will want to keep the dollar in check for as long as it can. But the patterns that we see on the longer-term charts for the dollar against most other currencies, I think, show clear evidence of overall base formation development. And I think that the euro is really too high. I think Mario Draghi, super central banker, would like to see that lower. I'd like to see the euro lower. And I think there's quite a lot of resistance, as we have seen last year, up near that 138, 139 level. And I don't really feel that there's a fundamental case for the euro to be moving above that level. I think the case is for ranging with a sideways to slightly lower bias overall for the euro. I would be a little bit more optimistic about sterling overall, because sterling got its devaluation in very early, and also it is pulled out of its recessionary phase. And I think if the Conservatives are re-elected, and that'll be a big if in 2015, but that we will be set for a period of gradual improvement in GDP growth and competitiveness for the UK, and it will be able to deal with a somewhat firmer currency overall. The emerging market currencies, which are taking such a battering right now, I think that they have seen most of that sell-off phase, and I would expect that it will begin to slow before long. But I don't think we get well, with emerging markets, we tend to get extreme moves from overvaluation to undervaluation, and we're now moving, well, we've moved considerably from the overvaluation levels back in June of 2013 towards an undervaluation level. We're well on our way towards that undervaluation level. And it'll go a little bit further. I think, and that will make those stock markets certainly very attractive, because they'll be more competitive with softer currency. They'll be on lower valuations, and then as international investors begin to move back into those emerging markets, that will help the to steady up their currencies and set them up for at least cyclical bull runs. And the whole thing about emerging markets is you have to buy them when no one wants them, buy them when they're weak, totally out of favor, and you'll do really quite well, because you just wait for that next cycle that I just talked about of international investors seeing that they're steadying and the valuations are attractive, and then bidding them higher, and then you get out when they look overextended. That's the object, at any rate. And you only think seriously go wrong in the emerging markets is if you chase the rallies that are becoming overextended. So again, I was talking about currencies, but before that last comment on the emerging markets, but the emerging market currencies, maybe they come a little bit lower here overall, but already these are looking much more attractive in terms of overall valuations. Now, what about I should mention the yen here. I think Japan definitely wants a somewhat weaker yen, and I think we'll probably see that. I would expect to see at least 110 yen to the US dollar. We're currently at 102 right now, and a somewhat weaker Japanese yen, I think, would help to ensure that this economic recovery in Japan actually continues. Now, looking at the commodity markets overall, the big question mark here is whether gold and silver which some of us have often described as hard money. Are they hard enough money here to be bottoming out at this stage? I think the odds are slightly in favor of that, as I've said before. It's certainly not a massive difference, maybe 55, 45 in terms of percentages, 55% probability that they are support building and will hold above the lows that we saw last year. If that proves to be wrong and we get another hit to the downside of any consequence, I think they would become outstanding buys. But my guess is that they are worth a nibble in here. I haven't done that yet myself. As all these markets come down, we become spoiled for choice here once again. So I'm probably more interested over the medium term in additional stock market investments. But the point I want to emphasize here is that precious metals, which are out of favor, and people are generally still bearish. I think that they don't have all that much additional downside. At the very outside, I think gold maybe goes back to 1,000, but that's the worst case in my opinion. Whereas over the next few years, I wouldn't be at all surprised if we saw the highs of 3 years ago retested. In terms of industrial metals, they show and have shown for quite some time some evidence of type 3 base formation development, but that's being questioned here right now. For instance, we've seen aluminium, which has been the weakest one all along. We've seen that move down to a new low in here recently. The others have fallen 6 or 7 days consecutively here and need to steady up in the next week or two to remain consistent with that overall base building hypothesis, and I wouldn't be surprised to see that. In commodities and in the last audio that I did last night, of course, on the Thursday audio, I mentioned that sugar, very overextended, having taken such a hammering, and that it looked as if it was beginning to build support, and was a recovery candidate. And I meant to go out and buy it, and so did Owen, incidentally. I was just discussing this with him earlier this evening, and we both forgot to do it. Here, my excuse is that getting my personal income tax papers in on time and getting my payment. Additional owed in tax in on time in the UK, which I managed to do, and I hope subscribers listening in the UK managed to do that themselves. You probably did it weeks ago, but that never quite works out that way for me. But I digress. What will happen with the agricultural commodities? I mentioned that that drought in the Californian region would have some global implications. It'll increase the costs of nuts, the cost of wine, possibly, cost of again avocados, cost of grapes, and I hope we get some offsetting very good weather in some of the other growing regions, such as South Africa. But it's pretty well all around the world these days, and that's the weather punt, and I'm not going to try to predict that, but it would be very, very helpful for the global economy if we did see food prices stay generally somewhat lower for a while longer. Keep your fingers crossed, or I will. And on that note, all the very best to all of you. Have a fantastic weekend.